Chapter 51. For we couldn't think of spending sixpence on it, my love, and can only consent to be brought in by the spontaneous thingamies of the incorruptible Latoyalkalums. Now, the point of view seized by the bewitching tippins, that the same working and rallying round us to keep up appearances, may have something in it, but not all the truth. More is done, or considered to be done, which does as well by taking cabs, and going about, apostrophe, than the fair tippins knew of. Many vast vague reputations have been made, solely by taking cabs and going about. This particularly obtains in all parliamentary affairs. Whether the business in hand be, to get a man in, or get a man out, or get a man over, or promote a railway, or jockey a railway, or what else, nothing is understood to be so effectual as scouring nowhere in a violent hurry, in short, as taking cabs and going about. Probably because this reason is in the air, Twemlow, far from being singular in his persuasion, that he works like a Trojan, is capped by Podsnap, who in his turn is capped by Boots and Brewer. At 8 o'clock, when all these hard workers assemble to dine at Veneering's, it is understood that the caps of Boots and Brewer mustn't leave the door, but that pails of water must be brought from the nearest bathing place, and cast over the horses' legs on the very spot, lest Boots and Brewer should have instant occasion to mount and away. Those fleet messengers require the analytical to see that their hats are deposited where they can be laid hold of at an instant's notice, and they dine remarkably well, though, with the air of firemen in charge of an engine, expecting intelligence of some tremendous conflagration. Mrs. Veneering faintly remarks, as dinner opens, that many such days would be too much for her. Many such days would be too much for all of us, apostrophe, says Podsnap, but we'll bring him in. Apostrophe, apostrophe, we'll bring him in, apostrophe, says Lady Tippins, sportively waving her green fan. Veneering forever. Apostrophe, we'll bring him in. Apostrophe, apostrophe, says Twemlow. We'll bring him in. Apostrophe, apostrophe, say Boots and Brewer. Strictly speaking, it would be hard to show cause why they should not bring him in. Pocket Breeches having closed its little bargain, and there being no opposition. However, it is agreed that they must work to the last, and that if they did not work, something indefinite would happen. It is likewise agreed that they are also exhausted with the work behind them, and need to be so fortified for the work before them, as to require peculiar strengthening from Veneering's cellar. Therefore, the analytical has orders to produce the cream of his bins, and therefore it falls out that rallying becomes rather a trying word for the occasion. Lady Tippins being observed gamely to inculcate the necessity of rearing round their dear Veneering, Podsnap advocating roaring round him, Boots and Brewer declaring their intention of reeling round him, and Veneering thanking his devoted friends one and all, with great emotion, for rollerling round him. In these inspiring moments, Brewer strikes out an idea which is the great hit of the day. He consults his watch, and says, like Guy Fawkes, he'll now go down to the House of Commons, and see how things look. I'll keep about the lobby for an hour or so, apostrophe, says Brewer, with a deeply mysterious countenance, and if things look well, I won't come back, but will order my cab for 9 in the morning. Apostrophe, you couldn't do better, apostrophe, says Podsnap. Veneering expresses his inability ever to acknowledge this last service. Tears stand in Mrs. Veneering's affectionate eyes. Boots shows envy, loses ground, and is regarded as possessing a second-rate mind. They all crowd to the door to see Brewer off. Brewer says to his driver, now, is your horse pretty fresh? Apostrophe, apostrophe, eyeing the animal with critical scrutiny. Driver says he's as fresh as butter. Put him along then, apostrophe, says Brewer, House of Commons. Apostrophe, driver darts up, Brewer leaps in, they cheer him as he departs, and Mr. Podsnap says, mark my words, sir, that's a man of resource, that's a man to make his way in life. apostrophe, when the time comes for Veneering to deliver a neat and appropriate stammer to the men of pocket breeches, only Podsnap and Twemlow accompany him by railway to that sequestered spot. The legal gentleman is at the pocket breeches branch station, with an open carriage with a printed bill Veneering forever stuck upon it, as if it were a wall, and they gloriously proceed, amidst the grins of the populace, to a feeble little town hall on crutches, with some onions and bootlaces under it, which the legal gentleman says are a market, and from the front window of that edifice Veneering speaks to the listening earth. In the moment of his taking his hat off, Podsnap, as per agreement made with Mrs. Veneering, telegraphs to that wife and mother, he's up. Apostrophe, Veneering loses his way in the usual no thoroughfares of speech, and Podsnap and Twemlow say hear, hear. And sometimes, when he can't by any means back himself out of some very unlucky no thoroughfare, hear. Apostrophe, apostrophe, with an air of facetious conviction, as if the ingenuity of the thing gave them a sensation of exquisite pleasure. But Veneering makes two remarkably good points, so good, that they are supposed to have been suggested to him by the legal gentleman in Britannia's confidence, while briefly conferring on the stairs. Point the first is this. Veneering institutes an original comparison between the country and a ship, pointedly calling the ship the vessel of the state, and the minister the man at the helm. Veneering's object is to let Pocket Breeches know that his friend on his right, Podsnap, is a man of wealth. Consequently, says he, and, gentlemen, when the timbers of the vessel of the state are unsound and the man at the helm is unskillful, would those great marine insurers, who rank among our world-famed merchant princes, would they insure her, gentlemen? Would they underwrite her? Would they incur a risk in her? Would they have confidence in her? Why, gentlemen, if I appealed to my honorable friend upon my right, himself among the greatest and most respected of that great and much respected class, he would answer no. Apostrophe, apostrophe, point the second is this. The telling fact that Twemlow is related to Lord Snigsworth must be let off. Veneering supposes a state of public affairs that probably never could by any possibility exist, though this is not quite certain, in consequence of his picture being unintelligible to himself and everybody else, and thus proceeds. Why, gentlemen, if I were to indicate such a program to any class of society, I say it would be received with derision, would be pointed at by the finger of scorn. If I indicated such a program to any worthy and intelligent tradesman of your town, nay, I will here be personal, and say our town, what would he reply? He would reply, away with it. That's what he would reply, gentlemen. In his honest indignation he would reply, away with it. But suppose I mounted higher in the social scale. Suppose I drew my arm through the arm of my respected friend upon my left, and, walking with him through the ancestral woods of his family, and under the spreading beeches of Snigsworthy Park, approached the noble hall, crossed the courtyard, entered by the door, went up the staircase, and, passing from room to room, found myself at last in the august presence of my friend's near kinsman, Lord Snigsworth. And suppose I said to that venerable earl, my lord, I am here before your lordship, presented by your lordship's near kinsman, my friend upon my left, to indicate that program, what would his lordship answer? Why, he would answer, away with it. That's what he would answer, gentlemen. Away with it. Unconsciously using, in his exalted sphere, the exact language of the worthy and intelligent tradesman of our town, the near and dear kinsman of my friend upon my left, would answer in his wrath, away with it. Apostrophe, Veneering finishes with this last success, and Mr. Podsnap telegraphs to Mrs. Veneering, he's down. Apostrophe, then, dinner is had at the hotel with the legal gentleman, and then there are in due succession, nomination, and declaration. Finally, Mr. Podsnap telegraphs to Mrs. Veneering, "We have brought him inches apostrophe. Another gorgeous dinner awaits them on their return to the Veneering halls, and Lady Tippins awaits them, and Boots and Brewer await them." There is a modest assertion on everybody's part that everybody single-handed brought him in. But in the main it is conceded by all, that stroke of business on Brewer's part, in going down to the house, that night to see how things looked, was the master stroke. A touching little incident is related by Mrs. Veneering, in the course of the evening. Mrs. Veneering is habitually disposed to be tearful, and has an extra disposition, that way after her late excitement. Previous to withdrawing from the dinner table with Lady Tippins, she says, in a pathetic and physically weak manner, "You will all think it foolish of me, I know, but I must mention it. As I sat by Baby's crib, on the night before the election, Baby was very uneasy in her sleep." Apostrophe, the analytical chemist, who is gloomily looking on, has diabolical impulses to suggest wind and throw up his situation, but represses them. After an interval almost convulsive, Baby curled her little hands in one another and smiled. Apostrophe, Mrs. Veneering stopping here, Mr. Podsnap deems it incumbent on him to say, "I wonder why?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, could it be, I ask myself, apostrophe, says Mrs. Veneering, looking about her for her pocket handkerchief, that the fairies were telling Baby that her papa would shortly be an MP? Apostrophe, so overcome by the sentiment is Mrs. Veneering, that they all get up to make a clear stage for Veneering, who goes round the table to the rescue, and bears her out backward, with her feet impressively scraping the carpet, after remarking that her work has been too much for her strength. Whether the fairies made any mention of the £5,000, and it disagreed with Baby, is not speculated upon. Poor little Twemlow, quite done up, is touched, and still continues touched, after he is safely housed over the livery stable yard in Duke Street, St. James. But there, upon his sofa, a tremendous consideration breaks in upon the mild gentleman, putting all softer considerations to the rout. Gracious heavens! Now I have time to think of it, he never saw one of his constituents in all his days, until we saw them together. Apostrophe, apostrophe, after having paced the room in distress of mind, with his hand to his forehead, the innocent Twemlow returns to his sofa and moans, "I shall either go distracted, or die, of this man. He comes upon me too late in life. I am not strong enough to bear him." Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.